This audio file comes from the Libri Ideas Library at www.libri-ideas-library.org. The library contains over 1,000 lectures and discussions which explore questions about the reality and relevance of Christianity. We ask you to respect the copyright for this audio file, which belongs to Libri Fellowship. The file is for personal use to share with friends, family and colleagues, but please do not publish the material in any format or post it on a website without seeking permission from Libri Fellowship. Please note that views expressed in the lecture and discussion time do not necessarily represent the views of Libri Fellowship.
Our study this evening is going to be the great oratorios of Handel, and with special reference to Israel and Egypt. Of course, we can't study them all. I'll give you just a bit of information concerning the others, but I would like to go into some detail concerning this, which is one of his greatest masterpieces. Now, Handel wrote an enormous amount of music, and he wrote 26 oratorios, which is just a very small part of his work. He wrote 40 operas and many other things. But first, I'd like to read a verse from Scripture that has much to do with our lecture this evening. And it comes from Exodus 15, verse 1 and 2. I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. Perhaps you recognize this as the first huge song of praise, and it was the first poem of the nation of Israel. Remember that Moses was one of the greatest poets who ever lived. Now here's an essay book by Romain Rolland, and I'd like to read you just a few excerpts concerning Handel. They used to call him the Great Bear. He was gigantic, broad, corpulent, with big hands and enormous feet. His arms and thighs were stupendous. His hands were so fat that the bones disappeared in the flesh, forming dimples. He walked bow-legged with a heavy rolling gait, very erect, with his head thrown back under its huge white wig, whose curls rippled heavily over his shoulders. He had a hot, long, horse-like face, which with age became bovine and swamped in fat, with pendant cheeks and triple chin, the nose large, thick, and straight, the ears red and long. His gaze was direct. There was a quizzical gleam in his bold eye, a mocking twist at the corner of his large, finely cut mouth. His air was impressive and jovial. When he smiled, says Burney, his heavy, stern countenance was radiant with a flash of intelligence and wit, like the sun emerging from a cloud. He was full of humor. He had a sly pseudo-simplicity, which made the most solemn individuals laugh, though he himself showed an unsmiling face. No one ever told a story better. His happy way of saying the simplest things differently from anyone else gave them an amusing complexion. If his English had been as good as Swift's, his bon mot would have been equally abundant and of the same kind. But really, to enjoy what he said, one almost had to know four languages, English, French, Italian, German, all of which he mixed up together. Even when he flew into a rage, people felt that he was laughing in his sleeve. Thus, when he seized by the waist the irascible Cuzzoni, who was a famous soprano, who refused to sing one of his airs and carried her to the window, threatening to throw her into the street, he said with a bantering air, "Now, madam, I know very well that you are a regular she-devil, but I'll make you realize that I am Beelzebub, the prince of devils." All of his life, he enjoyed a wonderful amount of freedom. He hated all restrictions and avoided all official appointments. This masterful character, with its violence and its transports of anger and of genius, was governed by a supreme self-control. In Handel, that tranquility prevailed, which is sometimes met with in the offspring of certain sound but late marriages. All his life, he preserved this profound serenity in his art. He had many terrible ups and downs in his life, but when he was composing, he was just completely separated from the things of this world. But the finest, purest feeling of which he was capable was his ardent charity. In a country which witnessed in the 18th century a magnificent impulse of human solidarity, he was one of those who were most sincerely devoted to the cause of the unfortunate. His generosity was not extended merely to this or that individual whom he had personally known, such as the widow of his old master, Lachau. It was lavished continually and abundantly in the interest of all charitable undertakings, more particularly in that of two such organizations which made a special appeal to him, the Society of Musicians and the Foundling Hospital. than this last brief place. In the last 3 years of his life, diligently attending the services of his parish church, St. George's, kneeling and manifesting by his gesture and his attitude the most fervent devotion. During his last illness, he said, "I wish I might die on Good Friday in the hope of joining my God, my sweet Lord and Savior, on the day of his resurrection." And as a matter of fact, the Lord answered that prayer because he did die on Good Friday. Now, I will tell you a few brief things about Handel, and we have quite a few things I'd like for you to listen to. You might glimpse at this list of oratorios. I mentioned earlier that he wrote 26, and I've only chosen the most outstanding ones, and there are others that are very fine as well. But Handel's dates are of extreme importance to us. They're 1685 to 1759. And at this same time, we have Vivaldi in Italy, Rameau in France, Bach in Germany, and Handel in England. And these are the great, great crowning men of the Baroque period. I'll tell you briefly that Handel was born in Halle, and he spent his early years and was, for a while, played in an orchestra. And there he wrote his first opera, or rather went to Italy and wrote his early operas. And he spent some time in Italy and was very much influenced in his time in Italy. And then he went to England. He was troubled because he was a very strong Protestant, and they were forever trying to persuade him to join the Roman Catholic Church. So he really finally went and spent his last great creative years, about 40 years, in England. And, of course, the greatest thing that he did was his use of his great writings for the chorus. And he really, really followed and built on the already existent great choral tradition of England. Because he lived fully and with his heart, and he suffered profoundly, Handel had a superb capacity to express his sensibility to human passion. And some have called him a lord of music, a prince of music. And certainly his music is amongst the most noble that has ever been written. He was a man who was, as we've seen, he was a man full of life. And he wrote music that was timeless, and yet very much for those who listened to it. He was extremely popular. He was one of the most popular men in the world of his day, and certainly probably the most highly paid composer in the world. And into the stifling air of London, he brought all the wonderful fragrance of the countryside. He was the great nature musician, the one who took great walks in the countryside and described it so beautifully in music. There's nothing mean or small in Handel. He was big of figure and big of heart. And he made great gestures in his music and in his life. He was very liberal, and even when he was poor, he was always remembered his friends. Now, he was, of course, you see many cartoons of him, and laughing and saying he was a glutton and he was a tyrant and all these other things. But he had a tremendous sense of humor, and he was a real human being. And I must personally confess that he is my favorite, perhaps, of all composers. But he was a man of great generosity, honesty, and I believe truly a man of sincere piety. Now let's move on and begin looking at the oratorios. This is just a brief introduction to his life. He did die in London, and he was blind in his last years. Now, we know that Messiah is the most popular oratorio that has ever been written, and certainly rightly so. I do feel that, as you probably know, Handel wrote it in a period of 3 weeks, just at right white heat, without hardly stopping to take his pen from the paper. And I do honestly feel that God gave it to him in some miraculous way. I think it's one of the greatest works of art in all of history. But since everybody knows it, I'm not going to spend time with it this evening, except to just say that it is his greatest masterpiece. But it is regrettable that this marvelous work has overshadowed the greatness of some of his other oratorios. Most of you probably here tonight are not familiar with the other oratorios, though I imagine all of you at some time have heard the Messiah. So I will consider just briefly some of these, but in detail we will listen to some of the music of Israel and Egypt. I must say we've been listening to Israel and Egypt at Chesley for about a month now, just constantly, and I look forward to listening to it next month too. But Romain Rolland, when he spoke of this great Israel and Egypt, said it is the most gigantic effort ever made in an oratorio. First we have Esther here in 1732, and you can just see these. I won't read through them except to mention some important things as we go along, but you'll see this is a very important list as you see it there. But let's take just a moment to think of these two great crowning men of the Baroque period, Bach and Handel. They were both, amazingly enough, born in the same year, and both in Germany, 1685. But there, their similarities cease, mainly, really. It is true that they both, in their later life, were blind. But their differences were greater than their similarities. Bach was the great objective composer, concerned with ideas, and his music is architecturally, gigantically, and marvelously molded together. But Handel was subjective, and he really was a relatively uncomplicated sort of man. And his music was literally himself. He was just absolutely filled with music, and he was just anxious to get all these ideas out of his head. He just apparently just the music just flowed out of him like a tremendous river. Now, instruments, as we listen to Bach, instruments are really the permeated Bach's music. And there are two types in the Baroque period, but the counterpoint, that is, let's say, when we don't do it as often as we used to, when we sing a Bach chorale on Sunday morning, every single part is important. The bass, the tenor, soprano, alto, and though it isn't exactly counterpoint, the idea of counterpoint is one point going and another one going counterpoint. And so you look at the music horizontally, and you see all these different voices going along. And this is what Bach stressed. And Handel did he looked at the music in a vertical way, so that the vocal line is the most important, and underneath are these wonderful chords supporting and lifting the vocal line. And Handel stressed the words and the voice, and certainly he's one of the greatest of all composers for the voice. He learned how to write wonderfully for the voice in Italy. I don't think Bach wrote as well for the voice. And his emphasis, as I mentioned, was on harmony. Bach's life was really centered around the church, and Bach traveled really relatively little, and he never left Germany. He studied all the composers around at the time that he could get music on. But he was really not really even very well known out of Germany. Whereas Handel, who was the truly international figure, and his influence and his fame was just absolutely tremendous in his own lifetime. People did laugh and think of him as a character, but they knew he was a very, very great man. He certainly was one of the very greatest composers of all time. But whereas Bach was his life centered in the church, Handel, mainly his life was in the theater. And his interest was, for many years, was opera. And then for the last years, he began about the age of 50, and then he began writing his oratorios. But it is true that Handel was not the genius in all forms, as Bach was. Now, Bach was great in fugue and in cantatas and the passions and great organ music, just endless instrumental music. But there was one place that no one ever exceeded Handel, and this was in the oratorio. And in the oratorio, Handel's genius appears in all its richness and its majesty and its power, and it's just its wonder, really. Now, I want us to hear a very beautiful song from Esther, the very first oratorio in English. There had never been an oratorio, and I'll explain a bit later what makes an oratorio different from an opera. But this was the very, very first oratorio in English, and it met with an enormous amount of success. But there was also a great deal of we'll find out a bit later, that there were some who were very troubled about it as well. But it had such a success that it really altered the whole nature of English music as we know it. And it was the beginning of a wholly, entirely new form. Now, there have, of course, been great many oratorios written since. There are endless oratorios in England, such as Mendelssohn's Elijah, Paul, and so on and so on. But certainly the very, very first one in English was this Esther. And it was so successful, and Handel he didn't only compose all these operas, but he was forever going to England and other countries to bring the singers there to perform in these operas, and he was sort of the impresario as well as the composer. You just can't believe that one man could have such an enormous amount of energy. And he lived to be 72. But he had many times of ill health, and he did have what some people call a nervous breakdown. I'm not sure exactly what it was, just overwork, I imagine. But it was so successful that in 1740 he abandoned opera once and for all, and then he really went on to write all these. Now, he wrote, of course, a lot of other organ music and so on. But In his oratorios, Handel gave England a national substitute for opera, and England has never gotten over this. Oratorio is still the heart of England in a real sense. Now, let's listen a bit to the first of these, and it's for the tenor, and it's really a very, you're just going to have brief snatches of all of these things, unfortunately, but it is called Tune Your Harps, and I think it's very appropriate for him to have this beautiful aria in his very first oratorio. And Handel's favorite instrument was the oboe. In one of his fire works or in some things, he has 16 oboes. You can't believe how much he loved the oboe. And his favorite word, which I think is glorious, and no one ever said it to music more wonderfully, was hallelujah, which means praise ye the Lord. But you all know the hallelujah chorus. But he used this word in many, many different places and said it more gloriously than anyone. Let's listen just a bit to Tune Your Harps from the first oratorio in English, Esther. You'll have the plucked strings and then you hear the oboe. No German ever surpassed Handel in writing beautiful melodies. He never learned English properly, as we have mentioned before, and he did mix up all these four languages together, and when he got angry, they really was a real jumble, and people could hardly understand him. But what I think is so amazing, that he set all these great oratorios, the marvelous, rich, full Shakespearean language in such a glorious fashion, even though he couldn't even speak the language. I think it's in itself a great miracle. Just one other thing about Esther before we move on is that the man who wrote the libretto, that is the words, was the great Frenchman Racine. And Racine, as you probably know, was one of the great literary figures of France. And later in life, and I've just talked to a French expert, later in life Racine apparently had a spiritual conversion and really became a Christian. And then he wrote Attila and he wrote Esther, which were, of course, two of the great plays in the French theater. But I think it's wonderful to have these wonderful minds meet together in such a way. Now, as I mentioned before, because Messiah is so familiar, we won't deal with it tonight. But I will mention one thing that I think is a strange paradox, and it really is sad indeed, that Handel, of course, it was absolutely new, a total revolution for anyone to write music to biblical verses that were going to be performed in the theater. And he was bitterly attacked by all the evangelicals and really suffered very, very, very much because he wrote such a thing as Messiah, which was performed in the theater. Someone that we are familiar with, John Newton, who was one of the great preachers of England, has written a very, very bitter tract against Handel, which we happen to have here. It really is, it's just very cruel indeed. And it's a very strange twist, I find, in Puritanism. And I do feel that there's a very wonderful place. I'm thankful that he wrote these great things that were taken into the theater where people could hear the gospel. But rather than listen to something from Messiah, I want us to listen to one of his concertos. And you will see as we listen to it that it sounds a bit like his Hallelujah Chorus. Now, Handel was a fantastic improviser on the organ. It must have been an experience beyond anything that Liberace could do for us to hear him improvise. And he would, it's just astonishing what this man would do. He would write the oratorio, arrange for all the singers, and then in between the various parts, they're usually an oratorio, is usually in three parts, he would go up and just out would flow this great music from the organ. And from these improvisations have grown his great organ concertos. And he did often play, and this was an added attraction, and everyone rushed to the theater to hear Handel play the organ. So let's listen to just the opening of one of his great organ concertos, number 9. Rhythmic vitality. Of these organ concertos, I highly recommend them. They're marvelous, marvelous listening. Now let me explain just a bit about oratorio itself, where it came from. It was actually born in Italy about the close of the 16th century. And Neri, the founder of the Congregation of the Oratorians, and they called oratorio that because it was held in the oratory of the church. And the first oratorio that was ever written, it was probably in Latin at that time, was the Good Samaritan. And this developed under such composers as Cavalieri, Carissimi, Scarlatti, Schütz, and brought to its highest supreme height by Handel, and in an endless flow of melody. Now, oratorio differs mainly from opera in the fact, and it is important to remember, because these are two of the main forms in music, and still, of course, heard all everywhere. But you should know the difference between these two basic large forms, and they are generally a very large form. And oratorio differs mainly simply because it has sacred subjects, and there is a tremendous emphasis on the chorus. And, of course, there is no costume, generally speaking. Sometimes they try to have it on the stage. But this is the main difference. I would add that the Passion, such as the St. Matthew and the St. John Passion of Bach, also they fall into this same field of oratorio with the sacred subject. Now let's move to this next oratorio, Saul. And Saul is certainly one of his richest and one of his fullest scores. I have the whole of this. I have most all of these oratorios. Most all of them at Chesley. Yes, all of them except the first one, which is not, as far as I know, recorded. And they are rich and marvelous and full of great music. But Saul is in a special way very, very interesting as far as the instruments are concerned. And in a real sense, Handel was the founder of instrumental music as we know it today. And he has all kinds. He was trying out things, and there are a lot of archaic things, but there are a lot of very startling effects and much variety in color and opulence in the instrumentation. Now, here we're going to hear a very unusual thing. They don't use it hardly ever. It's very unusual. But they're carillons, and at this time he found out about this particular instrument, and he introduced it into this oratorio, Saul. Of course, the opera Saul is simply the story of the life of Saul, and of course there's David and how Saul finally was killed, and his son as well. But let's listen to just this lovely chorus with the carillons. This is to welcome mighty King. Now, there are three types of oratorio, and we are going to hear one of each tonight. But this is what we have heard now. Saul is the heroic type of oratorio, Handel oratorio. There are three types, the heroic, the anthem, and the narrative. No, we're not going to hear a narrative, but it is Solomon here. It's a narrative. But we'll hear the other two. But these two are the main types. These three are the main types of oratorios that Handel wrote. Now let's listen to probably one of the most famous orchestral pieces of Handel. And really, we must remember that Handel's music, he really was a man of the theater. And he wasn't writing like some of our composers today for some kind of nebulous future. And as you probably know, modern music, much of it, at least in the classical area, there has been a real breakdown between the audience and the composer. And the composer often seems no longer to care what the people think. And he's sort of living for the future when there will be an audience that will catch up with him. But this is definitely not the case with Handel. He did not write. His music is conceived for the people and is not for an elite dilettante sort of an audience. So he wrote to please the people, but in the very finest sense of the word. But this probably that we're going to hear now, it's the death march from Saul. And it's played at all kinds of funerals, but it really is a very solemn and wonderful piece of music. We'll just hear a very, very brief part. But this is certainly one of the most famous of Handel's many orchestral pieces. It's not a very long piece, but we won't listen to it all tonight. Now, it's really quite amazing that in 1 year, and we'll come back to Israel and Egypt after we've looked at a few other things, but in this same year, in 4 months, he wrote two of the greatest masterpieces in the English language, Saul and Israel and Egypt. He took some time to write Saul, and 4 days after he'd finished Saul, he started in on Israel and Egypt, and he wrote that whole colossal thing in 27 days. So it just flowed out of him in just like a great, great waterfall. It's astonishing, really. Now, And so we will come back to that, but just remember that really and truly, this was the year of 1738. It was in the autumn time. And also in this year, remembering Bach, it was the same year that Bach wrote the B minor Mass. It was also at the very time when Wesley and Whitfield were in London, at this very same time when Handel lived there. And it is very, it's very thrilling to me that in Christian Praise, we have a hymn with the words by Wesley and the music by Handel. And Handel did know Wesley. And I think it's so exciting to think of these two men meeting and then Handel setting Wesley's words to music. It's one of my favorite hymns of all. It's number 80. Well, now we come to one of his immediate... Well, no, we'll come back here. I'm sorry. I'll speak about these and then I'll go on. But L'Allegro, 1740. And sometime later, Lord willing, I would love to give a lecture on Milton and Handel. You know that both were great, great men, and I think both Christians. Milton was one of the great Puritan poets of his time. And Handel used his words for three of his things. He used them for L'Allegro and Il Penseroso, for Samson, and then the occasional oratorio, which is actually translations of the Psalms by Milton. But I think it's just marvelous to think of these two great men, and there are many similarities between them. But one, of course, is that both went blind, and it reminds us of another great, great poet, Homer, who also went blind. But this is for another time. But L'Allegro is certainly just... one of the great things about Handel was his marvelous description of nature. Now, he describes the bird calls, the sunset, darkness, all the sounds and feels of nature like no one else ever has, really. Then Messiah, which we won't deal with, and Samson, Belshazzar, and then we come to Judas Maccabeus. And Judas Maccabeus was written, of course, sometime later than Messiah. And it was an immediate and overwhelming success. And people still love it. It is certainly not one of my favorites, but it has some very wonderful music in it. But it really was just a terrific success right away. Now, we must remember that Handel really began to acquire his mastery of choral composition in Italy, and as well as his marvelous understanding of the human voice. It's a pity that Bach didn't have a chance to go to England. But nonetheless, Handel really knew about the voice and how to set music in the most pleasing and useful way, as it were, for the voice. Let's listen to just one chorus from Judas Maccabeus, which I'm sure you'll all be familiar with, and it is See the Conquering Hero Come. Wasn't averse to using one piece of music in another oratorio, so he also uses this in his oratorio Joshua. But it fits in both places. Beethoven was a great, great admirer of Handel. He said, this is a quote from Beethoven, "Go and learn of Handel how to achieve great effects with simple means." Now, Handel did not use the really complicated harmony of Bach. He used very orderly progressions of simple harmony and just had enormous, colossal, overwhelming effects. You probably know that he wrote a lot of outdoor music, and two of these great things are the water music and the fire music, and I recommend them both to you. They're both really just great pieces of music. The fireworks music it's rather humorous, but he did compose it for a great celebration that they were having in, I forget, some large gardens in London. and everyone was gathered, and they were going to perform this great piece of music, and they began to shoot off the firecrackers, and the whole stage burned up. So I don't know. This was certainly an unforgettable evening. But he has this sense of largeness, of space in his music, and yet there's nothing ever strange or awkward or bizarre about it. And he really, in all his nobility, and some have called him the prince of music, there was nothing mousy about him, nothing small in his life or in his thoughts or in his music. He was a man of great amplitude of mind. And his life was really rich in music, and he poured it forth generously for all of us to enjoy. Now, I have mentioned that Handel and Milton are very, very similar, and that Handel was really the great musical nature painter. And he saw things visually in his music. And I'm sure that he did love great paintings, and he was a great collector of paintings. And he had some original Rembrandts. And I think this is such a marvelous combination, because I think of Rembrandt, another man who really was a Christian, who loved God and served him in his painting, I think, in a deep and profound way, that there are two parallels in these two great painters of nature. But Handel was the pastoral composer of bird calls, of the nightingale, and then there's this expression we use of light and darkness, what we call chiaroscuro. Now, this is, of course, the great term in painting of this period, in the Baroque period. It's a very important chiaroscuro, which was a very important term in dealing with the paintings of Rembrandt. But when we come in a moment or two to Israel and Egypt, it will give us this tone painting in music at its very, very greatest. And then we have Solomon, which again is a very, very beautiful oratorio, and it's a narrative oratorio full of great, great choruses. And of course, it's the story of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. And then finally, his very last oratorio was Jephthah, another very great oratorio. And he went blind during the composition of this and had to dictate the end of it. But these are really the outstanding of his oratorios. Now let's go to Israel and Egypt. And I do have a very, very wonderful recording of it. And if anybody has records, be sure to get this recording. It's something you really should have in your collection. Now, Handel was really thoroughly, thoroughly familiar with the Bible. He really knew his Bible, and so did Bach. They were men who really understood the spiritual content of the Bible. It was not just something that they did automatically, but they understood it in depth. And he very probably put together the words of this great anthem oratorio, Israel in Egypt. Now, all the words are biblical. Everything, all the words are biblical, and they come mainly from the book of Exodus and from the Psalms. And we should remember that this oratory was written some years before Messiah. You see, it was written, here we go, Israel and Egypt in 1739, and Messiah comes 1742. So it's astonishing what we have already in Israel and Egypt. It was written, as I mentioned before, in 27 days, just 4 days after he'd finished this other colossal masterpiece, Saul. And Handel was at the height of his powers. So that in the space of just 2-4 months, he wrote two of his greatest oratorios. What immense, immense creative energy. It you just can't imagine being able to do such a thing. Now, the original title was The Song of Moses. But unlike other oratorios, it only has two parts. And the first part is the description of the 10 plagues in Egypt. And we're going to listen to some of these, and they're fabulous descriptions of the plagues. And the second part, which actually Handel composed first, it is the flight from Egypt, that is the Song of Moses, and taken mainly from Exodus 15, this great first great song of the Bible. Marvelous, marvelous poem by Moses, which was actually sung after the children of Egypt had come across the Red Sea and looked back and saw the Red Sea close on their enemies. And they, there must have been nearly 3 million of them, sang this great antiphonal poem, Exodus 15. But the thing that is overwhelming to us is that when it was first performed, this Israel in Egypt, it was an absolute failure. Just an outright failure. And Handel, of course, lost a lot of money on it. And it wasn't performed again for 17 years. And every time it was performed, all during Handel's life, it was always a failure. And yet today it is considered one of the giant, towering masterpieces. But I think part of it, I think certainly part of it, we should really remember, and let me repeat it again, that the idea it was of using biblical words in an oratorio to be performed in the theater was very revolutionary. And there were many people who objected to it. So this partially was the reason that people probably didn't like it. But, of course, it is very, very popular today. Not performed, perhaps, as often as it should. Now, let's listen to some of the things. We're going to listen only to a few things. I'm sorry. But I have the whole score here, and it really is really one of the most wonderful experiences to sit. Just sit through and listen to the whole thing with the score and watch the words and see the music before you. It's a great experience. Now, it has no overture. Originally, it was thought that a funeral anthem was performed before it. But it starts right in, immediately, with the tenor recitative. And it just goes right in, and it says, and the words are, and the diction is marvelous of this tenor. And he says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. And he set over Israel taskmasters to afflict them with burdens, and they made them serve with rigor." So immediately, you're right into the heart of the story. Now we come immediately to one of Handel's great choruses, and it's a double chorus. In other words, there's a whole four-part chorus here and another whole four-part chorus here. And he uses this in a particular way all through this Israel and Egypt, and it gives you a sense of the spaciousness and the openness of the music, just and the possibility of answering and questioning and answering. This is one, of course, probably the idea of this came from Venice. You know, Venice in the 17th or this the 17th century was the center of world's music. And if you've any of you've been to Venice, you know the St. Mark's Cathedral, which is really the heart of Venice. And if you go inside, there's this huge, huge, huge basilica-like affair, and there's a great balcony on one side and another great balcony on the other side, an enormous space in between. And what they did was one choir would sing on this side, and then the other choir would answer. And it was as if they were just in drawing in the whole space around them, using the space to amplify the music. A great and wonderful thing to hear something there. But we're coming now to the second, to the first chorus, and the words are, "And the children of Israel sighed." And notice that as you hear the choir sing it, and then you hear the orchestra, you hear the response of the orchestra as the orchestra sighs. And, well, we'll listen on, and there is a unique Handelian grandeur about this chorus. Listen to the orchestra. By reason of the bondage, it says, "And their cry came up unto God." Just the end of the chorus, this great final, "And their cry came up unto God." Now, this oratorio concentrates on the fate of God's people. And the all-dominating narrator is the choir itself. Handel uses the choir like the Greek choir, commenting on the action. And it's amazing that the words of most of the choruses, and I think this is one of the great secrets of this music, is that they're very short sentences, very, very brief sentences that you can quickly understand. And Handel wanted us to understand what was going on. He wanted us to get the message. So we come to next to a fugue, and we're in the midst. Now, this is called the plague music. And we won't hear all 10 plagues, but nonetheless, we'll hear one or two, three or four, perhaps. And this first one is a very, very fine fugue in a style of Handel, an excellent Handelian fugue. And they loathed to drink of the river. He turned their waters into blood. And you can hear it. They loathed, and the loathe goes down. They loathed to drink of the river. He turned their waters into blood. He's using quite a bit of chromaticism here. Now we go to the next one, and this is really quite humorous. I wish you could hear the whole thing, but it is the one of the frogs. And I'm sure when Handel wrote it, he had the most delightful time having the frogs jump in the orchestra. But the alto sings, "Their land brought forth frogs, yea, even in the king's chambers." And then she goes on and she speaks of, "He gave their cattle over the pestilence. Blotches and blains broke forth on man and beast." And she goes right on vocalizing on blotches and blains hilariously. But it's a delightful and wonderful piece of music. You hear the hopping frogs in the orchestra. Over to the pestilence. Listen to it a little while, you tend to go around singing blotches and blains quite a bit. I think one of the difficulties with Israel and Egypt, and probably one of the reasons why it failed at first and over again, was the fact that it is almost without arias. Now, this is one of the rare arias. There's one for each, perhaps, but there are very, very few arias in it. And there is the disappearance of what we call the da capo aria. You know, very often they would sing through the whole aria and then they'd repeat the whole first part. And I wish they never did do that. It gets rather boring. But so Handel finally got rid of this da capo aria. And so that really the Messiah is the only of all these oratorios that uses more choruses than all the other oratorios, except Israel and Egypt. But these today are his two most popular. And certainly Handel is at his greatest in his choruses. But I do feel that perhaps when it was first performed, there were practically no arias. And this is one, it was just one great avalanche of choruses, which just simply just flattened the people, must have. I will just say in parenthesis that one of the arias that he later, we think, added to it is called Thanks Be to Thee, and this is sort of the theme song of the La Brea Ensemble. I don't know if you all know about the La Brea Ensemble, but there are three of us in this trio, and we've given concerts in many places in America and all over Europe, and it is called the La Brea Ensemble, and we very often open with this Thanks Be to Thee from Israel and Egypt. Well, now, we'll come to the next one, and you just feel that Handel is so convinced of the Bible that it just gives him the freedom to write all this music. He's not one of the higher critics in any sense of the word. And so we come to the next aria, the next chorus, and he just said, he spake the word, and he keeps insisting. Then you just know that Handel emphasizes it being the word of God. And he spake the word, and then there's this terrific description of the flies and the locusts. And there came all manner of flies. He spake the word, and there came all manner of flies. And then you hear very, very, very furious violin playing, and we know that they are the flies. And then the basses add the locusts somewhat later. But you'll hear the flies, and you'll also hear the locusts. Only Handel could do this. Then we'll hear the light in the bass. And the locust came with that number and devoured the fruits of the ground. Another wonderful thing about many of these courses, of course you're not hearing them in completion, but nonetheless, they're not real long things, they're briefer things, but very each one quite different from the other, but wonderfully descriptive. Now we come to probably the greatest replica or description of a storm in the history of music. And this is the next plague, of course, and he gave them hailstones, fire mingled with the hail, ran along upon the ground. But it is one of the really great moments in description of a storm. And it's amazingly in the key of C. Probably another great description of a storm is Wagner's A Flying Dutchman or the opening of Valkyrie. But certainly this is one of the marvelous ones. And you hear the hailstones, they begin to drop gradually, then they get thicker and thicker and thicker, and then there's this tremendous antiphonal effect in both the chorus and the orchestra of the terrific hailstorm. It's a very elemental type of harmony, but in great masses of a very strong power. We'll listen to this all the way through. It's very short. Here begins the hail. He gave them hailstones for rain. Goes. some people, it is perfectly true, accuse Handel of plagiarism, and particularly Israel and Egypt, and they can tell you this composer and that composer who he took from, Stradella being one of them. But I say, didn't Shakespeare too, and didn't Bach, and did many others. And I think that whenever Handel borrowed something, as it were, from another composer, he just improved it. That's all he did. And you never think about the other composer again. But everything that Handel touched turned to gold. It really did. And really, Shakespeare did the same thing. Shakespeare's stories weren't original in themselves. So whatever Handel touched, it really did, he improved it. Now we come to one of the really great moments, and it is the moment he sent thick darkness over all the land, which could be felt. Now, we can't listen to the whole, but it's just two brief pages, and it's one of the great moments in the whole history of music, not just this, but in all. It's sort of, he just, as it were, traverses the whole harmonic space in this one brief two pages of modulation, and you just feel the darkness around you, the stillness that can be awesome. It's just an amazing series of modulations, and there's a heaviness of profound and pressing night. So let's listen just to a bit of it. Even darkness which might be felt. Now, I am skipping much of the great music, but just to give you some introduction, we come to one of his greatest of all of his choruses. And certainly the theme we have here is one of the most beautiful that Handel ever wrote. But I do urge you to get, if any of you are interested in having any kind of a decent record collection, this should be in your collection. Now, we come to his chorus, "But As for His People," and you just feel, and this is the wonderful thing about Israel and Egypt, the whole thing is infused with thankfulness to God, with awareness of the greatness of God, the God of creation, and of all of his power and his majesty and his sovereignty over all things. And we just feel it, particularly in this wonderful chorus. And Handel does grip our attention if we listen and kindles our imagination. We should be thinking of all these things that he is describing in the music. But let's listen to just a bit, "But As for His People." You just feel like you're out in the field. You hear, listen to the flutes and the violins. It's just the freshness of Spain. He led them forth like a sheep. Then we come skipping. He brought them out with silver and gold. Feeble person among their tribes. And then you listen at the end and... Handel says, and that is that. Just, that's the way it is. Not one feeble person the Lord brought out of the land of Egypt. Now, we're moving on to the end, but we come now to a very exciting and marvelous two pages, and it is the description of the opening of the Red Sea. Let's see if I can find it. And it is only in 8 measures, but they're standing at the Red Sea, and he rebuked the Red Sea, and it opened up. And you just feel that, you just feel the awe of the people who stood there and saw God as he opened up the Red Sea before their very eyes. It must have been an enormous experience for them. And I feel that as you listen to this, you can almost feel something of the experience that they had there. Here we go. It's only just one brief page. He rebuked the Red Sea and it was dried up. An enormous chorus sings this. Again, a double chorus. And they're at the Red Sea. And you're convinced that Handel believed it was God's miracle. Then we come to the description of the waters. The waters overwhelm their enemies. And you just can hear the rolling of the waters as the Red Sea closes on the enemies of the Israelites, the Jewish, the Egyptians. Just the rolling. Not one of them left. Now we're coming towards the end, but just I wanted to hear just a few more things. And one is, the Lord is a man of war. And this is the second half, the Song of Moses. And we have this long poem, and he writes many parts of it. But just briefly, this great duet, and this is one of the most famous things. The Lord is a man of war. And certainly one of Handel's greatest choruses. It's unsurpassed in its power. And the words, again, very brief words, the people shall hear and be afraid. And you remember all through the Old Testament, people everywhere had heard of this opening of the Red Sea, and people were afraid of the Jews, of the Israelites. You remember when they went in, Joshua went into the city of Jericho, and how the people were terrified because of these people whom God had opened the Red Sea for. So this here we have this. This is really contains the noblest aspects of Handel's genius. The people shall hear and be afraid. Just a little tiny bit of it. Sorry, we can't hear more. Just the concentrated power of it. think this is one of the things we can learn in our own spiritual lives, to look back to the miracles of the past and to be encouraged by them. And all through the Bible, all the Jewish people, all through the Old Testament, always, and also the New Testament, are always looking back to this great, great moment when they were formed as a nation after the Lord had brought them out of Egypt, and they looked back and saw the Red Sea that God had opened for them. And they came through, and not one of them had muddy shoes on. Well, now we're at the last one. We're coming to the final one. And it is a very great ending. And the whole chorus is marvelous. But we just have the very end. And you hear again, you feel Handel, the man who knows how to describe so many things. And it is the horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. And you just feel the galloping of the horse. And then the final great phrase, I will sing unto the Lord. I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. And you remember, this is what Miriam, at the end of this great song, she and the other women sing this great last phrase. I will sing unto the Lord, because he has triumphed gloriously. Remembering as we listen to this, that Israel in Egypt is certainly the greatest choral epic in existence. And if you ever get an opportunity to hear it, be sure to do so. There's all these wonderful illustrative choruses. But let's listen to the final climax. Just a brief introduction to Israel and Egypt, and a brief introduction to this great man, Handel. He was a man of one of the most affectionate and appreciative of men, humorous and comical, but an enormous genius, and certainly, as one has referred to him, that heaven-sent Handel, that heaven-sent genius Handel. And I do believe that he really served God with the gifts and abilities that God gave to him, and we can still love and enjoy what he has left for us today.